Hello, my name is Philip Miritan, and today's conversation is going to be about using our minds, our thoughts, to create a better life and improve reality. Now, this may sound sort of impossible, or maybe even happy talk, or maybe just metaphors, but this idea that thought creates reality is at the root of some very popular books and very long traditions. For example, there's The Secret by Rhonda Byrne. And then we have an ancient set of Hindu texts called the Upanishads. We have the teachings of Buddha. We have my own book called The Heaven at the End of Science. And we have another book called Do You Quantum Think? New Thinking That Will Rock Your World, written by our guest today, Diane Collins. Now, before I introduce Diane, I want to set the table a little bit here. First of all, the idea that thought creates reality has many sources. One of them is quantum theory. Now, quantum theory is a theory of the physical world that says at the base of reality are not things. They're not things independent of us, of our minds, but maybe things called wave particles, wave equations, or maybe there's nothing at all independent of our minds. So quantum theory changes our perception, changes our perspective. And one interpretation of quantum theory is that reality does not come into focus until an observation takes place, meaning that consciousness has a role, and perhaps the primary role, in creating reality. So in a way, it's little known understanding that science is telling us that thought perhaps creates reality. Now, as I said, our guest today is Diane Collins, who has been called one of the foremost thought leaders of our time. She is master of translating the old ways of thinking into the new ways of thinking, inspired by some of the concepts of quantum theory. She provides a practical platform to help us change the way we conduct our business and personal affairs. She consults executives with the world's leading corporations, as well as enterprising entrepreneurs, celebrities, and evolutionaries in the groundbreaking system of new thinking she created called Quantum Think. Now, as I said, her book is called Do You Quantum Think? New Thinking That Will Rock Your World. Welcome to the show, Diane.
Thank you very much, Philip. I'm really happy to be with you in this conversation.
And it's a pleasure.
I feel it's an important conversation.
And as I was saying, I think that we have a lot in common in reading your book, which I greatly enjoyed. And what I'd like to do here is to focus our conversation on this concept of thought creating reality. But before we go there, I think it's helpful for the listeners to understand how you yourself arrived at the idea of quantum thinking. Was there something in your life, your upbringing, education, that brought you to the place you're at now?
It was really gradual for me because as a teenager, I had an older brother and sister, and they would bring to college, and I started reading a lot of philosophy books and psychology books, and always, I would say, inquisitive, curious about the way things developed in life. And it seemed to me, even then, that there was a discrepancy between the, you know, how we aspired to be as a humanity, as human beings, all the virtuous ways that, and, you know, the noble ways of being human, and then how we actually were in the world, like killing each other en masse and calling it war and saying that, oh, well, you know, there's always been war, there's always been conflict, and other things of this nature. So I looked at it and said, we'll actually make some kind of real transformational difference. You know, how could we connect to life in its higher expressions, let's say? And this is what led me on the journey. And what I realized even then is that it would take a literal leap in consciousness. There had to be an awakening. So as I began to research and investigate, you know, metaphysics and spiritual wisdom and the new thought that you're talking about, that related to the expression, you know, as you think, so you become, thought creates. And I eventually came across a book by Fritjof Capra, The Tao of Physics, where I saw that the new quantum discoveries were converging with the universal wisdom common to all wisdom traditions, you know, the ancient traditions, you know, and what was that? And you mentioned an aspect of it, this idea, which in physics is called the observer effect, that even though in the physical dimension of life, and life is multidimensional, but we've been brought up to think in a kind of a one-dimensional from the 17th century science that said only the physical is real. But what they discovered are things like that there are distinctions, but no actual separation, so that, you know, the masters, the literature would say it, the world exists on this ground consciousness. And then the physicists, as you know, came along and they said, well, nothing exists until we observe it. And another word for that they use is measurement. And there are still, as you know, physicists who are not in accord with what you and I are talking about right now. But this is really what led me to it, is that I finally realized that, you know, science being a kind of god, or at least well-respected in our culture, that if I could have people access a kind of a conscious awakening via the language of science. And so that's really what led me to it.
Okay, one of the most important things to do, I think, for the normal person on the street is to try to distinguish the old way from the new way. And we have a lot of discussion on this, and a lot of people like you, like me, that talk about breaking through the old way of thinking, and we all use different words for it, but I hope that we're saying the same thing. And I think it would be helpful for you to put in your own words what you mean by the old way, or the mechanistic worldview. And so we can distinguish these two ways of thinking clearly.
Okay, good. Well, you know, I have to just say something about this, how I even got led to the idea that we think in a system based on the assumptions, beliefs, notions, ideas of the prevailing world view. Because, and so the difference, I do want to tell you a little bit how I got led to it.
That's good.
In my own mind, but the distinction being that rational science, which began in the 17th century, which gave rise to the industrial age, was literally called the classical mechanical world view. So those ideas, which was the universe as machine, that if they could, the scientists being, if you could figure out how you could break down, that's why it's called reductionistic, reduce this machine called the universe to the sum of its parts, figure out what the parts are made of and how they work together in a cause and effect manner, then we could, quote, predict and control nature, you know, predict and control life. What I do in quantum thinking is look at not so much the science in and of itself, I'm not a scientist, but to look at how the discoveries have shaped the way we think, because they, at that time, in order, they needed to separate, for whatever reason, from the church, from the clergy and from the church, and anything to do with spirit. Oh, I know a lot of those scientists of the time were spiritual. But in the science itself, they said, only physical matter is real. That's the reality. So then when you look at today, well, how did that affect us? and you realize, you know, you and I, Philip, are talking about mind and the important role of mind in how results or experience or, quote, creation of reality rolls out. Yet, that's not a part of our educational system. Yes, we, you know, study about the brain being, again, the physical matter. So the whole orientation around the five senses, around a push and pull, you know, they saw everything as solid objects that in order to have anything happen, you would push and pull on an object. So how that translates over into everyday human life is that we see circumstances, quote, physical matter, and it's not even worth thinking it. It's like the background context from which we live, that we imagine that a lot of the circumstances of life are fixed, that there's some kind of objective reality out there, quote, that's the way it is. And so it's a very limited view of the nature of reality, as now we're in this quantum age. And the quantum discoveries, as you know, Philip, have in many ways overturned a lot of the assumptions that came from the earlier science, even though in and of itself, genius, and we still, you know, obviously live, and many of the laws and principles of that still working and ingeniously and gave us the world of machines. Now we're in this quantum age where, like everything, the theories and the practices of science evolve. Now we're in an age where nonlinear effects, right?
Right.
These quantum effects, these shifts in state, instantaneous quantum leaps, shifts in state with no traceable pathway as to how that shift happened. And when you start to look at, and it's multidimensional, right, many dimensions, when you begin to then say, well, what if we could map that onto our thinking? What if we can map the more updated and accurate view of the way things work on the planet in our own thinking? How would that work out? And just as a quick example, one of the ways is, you know, the young minds this way, old worldview, circumstance rules, new worldview, intent rules, because intent being the central dynamic of mind, when you realize that there are circumstances, that how we are reached to those circumstances is where we have that power of mind. So when you say, oh, you create, well, did you create the moon? Did you create, you know, an illness in your family? Maybe not. But what we have absolute jurisdiction over is how we can choose to be related to that. And when we operate from this kind of consciously generated new context, it literally begins to reshape the circumstances. So,
yeah, I think that you really packed a lot of ideas into that answer, Diane, and I thought that was very, very well put. There's a lot of themes running through your book, and as you just articulated, and maybe we could break these down a little bit for the two of us and for the listener. This first concept, which is that the mechanistic or the old worldview is based upon the principle that there is a real objective world independent of human perception. That's the way I look at it. That's what I think
right.
is the common way to describe the old world view. And we could say that maybe Newton was the originator of it. Maybe I like to say that it's really common sense. It's really a naive realism viewpoint of the world, but to make it more front and center for people, you could turn to Einstein in the early 20th century that wrote a paper. It was on Bell's theorem, I believe, but he said that essentially science is based upon the assumption that there's a real world independent of human perception. And when you look at a lot of the scientists today, you will see a passage like that in a lot of books. It's interesting that in Stephen Hawking's newest book, The Grand Design, he comes right out and questions whether there is really an independent world outside of human perception. So what we're seeing, and I think I like to think of it as more of a triangulation. I completely agree that there's a convergence going on here, and the convergence is really, in my mind, between science and spirituality. I think we're reaching a point. We can call it a tipping point. We call it the point of no return. There's all sorts of terms we could probably use. But as you point out, quantum theory is based upon the finding that there is no objective world independent of human perception. So in my mind, we have an outright contradiction. We have science today, materialistic science, based upon the assumption that there's a real world, but their leading theory, quantum theory, says there's no such real world independent of human perception. Right. And I've written an article or two on this concept, and it was interesting that when we had Bruce Rosenbloom on the show a couple of weeks ago, and Bruce Rosenbloom is the author of Quantum Enigma, and really one of the, I don't know if he's a leading thinker, but he's definitely a clear thinker on the topic. He really said that there is no scientist that would disagree with the notion that there is no objective world. And so the question is, well, if that's the case, then why are we proceeding as if there really is one? So that's one point that I think needs to be made.
That's what I wanted to get.
I think that's one point. Yeah. And the other point I would add right now is that I think that what's been missing in this new spirituality, new age, or whatever we're calling it, and we could have that discussion too, but what this field is a metaphysical foundation, or a context, or a logical basis. And I think that's one reason why the leading scientists sort of just dismiss out of hand books like The Secret.
Right. Okay, right. So this is really good, because this is really the thesis of quantum think that you're pointing to right now. And this was what I call my version, because I looked at it and I thought, as you think, so you become. Thought creates reality. Well, how does it do that? And if all you had to do is change your thought to change the world, well, then how come it still looks the way it does?
Right.
So what this is, my part of my discovery was that we, like everything in the universe, is whole systems, interpenetrating whole systems. It's not a universe of parts, even though it appears that to the ordinary five sense. So that when I looked at thinking as a system based in the overarching system called the prevailing worldview, what we believe to be true about the nature of reality and how it works, well, when you look at what's happening now, is that, and this is what quantum thinking is all about, is to be able to make the distinction that the old view has limited our institution, science. Because if we're brought up in the educational system, the political system, you know, it's an either-or reality. Think about it. In order to predict and control how things work, you'd have to say it's either this way or that way. And that goes back to, you know, the common perception. You are looking out at the world thinking everything in the physical domain looks separate. Objects look separate. We look separate from one another. So this is what I know you mean, Philip, by a common sense perception. Yet, when you look, when you see this at a deeper and you realize, no, it's a multi-dimensional reality. There is a metaphysics, right, above the physical. There is, in my book, Do You Quantum Think, I distinguish seven dimensions. You know, it's an infinite possibility universe, so you could distinguish it any way you want. But if you look at it, there's a physical dimension, there's an energetic dimension, there's a spiritual dimension, I say, of heart, there's an esoteric dimension of soul, and all these different things, the cosmic dimension of the laws operating in the universe that scientists are able to discover and use, and, of course, the ultimate mystery, which we could call divine. And so when you look at all this, the virtual dimension, how could I leave that out of mind, and you realize that our thinking has been conditioned by the old world, classical worldview that did not acknowledge any of those things. Or as I say, you know, the classical worldview sandwich, I'll take matter sliced, keep the spirit side and hold the soul. Even mentioning those words,
yeah.
Right, is like anathema. It's
yeah.
like, what? Oh, no.
Yeah.
So that's why we have scientists today who are, they find that objectionable because the scientific method, right? What are we dealing with? So there's another aspect of the disconnect where we are so automatically, you know, I use that not to insult anyone, classical, mechanical, in many ways, we are automatic in the way that we think, automatic in our assumptions, you know, mechanical in the way that we think, so that we imagine we're open-minded, but not really, because it less and until you start to open your view and your mind to the fact of the multidimensionality of life and begin to realize that, yes, there is, you know, as Einstein and the other, you know, brilliant thinkers, you don't need a scientist to tell you this.
Yeah,
you can know it in your own experience, right?
Yeah, and I think that what you're doing, and I think is important because you're trying to bring this new way of thinking front and center in our own minds. And I couldn't agree more with that approach, because I think what's happening now is that the old worldview still dominates modern society, in
right.
my mind. And even though we know that there is mounting evidence against the old worldview or the old way of thinking. And so, well, how do you change that? Well, one way, and maybe the most direct way, is to change the way you think, right? I mean, that's sort of what it
well, that's it.
That's sort of what I was thinking you were going with this, right?
Yeah, because this is what happened. Okay, so I realize we think in a whole system. It's not like you're going to sit there changing the one thought at a time as,
right.
you know, I wrote this. I don't think so.
Right.
You know, it's just, can
right.
you imagine the agony, not to mention the impossibility of it. But when you think that you can make whole system leaps, quantum leaps in consciousness. So we have to be careful, Philip, not to fall prey to the either or thinking, because it's not like we leap, you know, what else did we learn from the classic mechanical worldview, how to analyze, you know, organize into the different scientific disciplines so we could organize life. It was obviously needed for us to do that at that point in the evolution of humanity on Earth, is to get things organized, right?
Right.
And so through that, we learned by default analytical thinking, logical thinking, linear, you know, straight line, incremental thinking. and time moving in one direction only. And now we know. So how we do it is it's an expansion. It's not a replacement. So it's not an either or. You know, one of the quantum principles is moving from either or to a both and world. That's one of the quantum things distinctions as well. And so what I'm saying is, okay, we're good at that. We're so good at analytical, unionizing, all that stuff. Now, how can we become good at quantum thinking? And what happened is, so because quantum is a whole other kind of workability of reality. So it's we can expand. Now, the thing is this. And I say, you cannot see a new worldview from the perspective of an old worldview. Why? The old worldview is the more limited view. It's the one-dimensional, only the physical matters. Whereas the new worldview, we'll call it the quantum worldview for short, is the more expanded, infinite possibility universe. In any moment, reality can manifest, right, in an infinite number of ways depending on how we observe. And so observe is not just the same as perception. Observation is what you hold in consciousness, what you hold in mind. So perception is more, the physical five senses, just to make that distinction. So I was reading this book a long time ago called, this tiny little book called The Universe, and Mr. Einstein, or Dr. Einstein,
right.
by Lincoln Barnett. And he was making this amazing point, right? A tiny little book trying to describe what Einstein was saying.
Right. Well, hopefully he did it.
And he actually did a great job in it. But in his preface, he said that the discoveries of science reach the public mind and consciousness, and at that time, he wrote it, I think, in the 50s, that it could take about, he said, 1,500 years to reach the public mind and consciousness.
That was 50 years or 1,500 years?
50.
50, okay.
Okay, but that was
a long time
ago, right? Before the internet and everything, we know everything is accelerating now. But so you figure, it's going to be much quicker now. But he said it would have, like, the reason he was making the point that Einstein was the most, revolutionary, the most famous scientist of our time, of a modern age. And yet most people didn't really know or understand what did he really say,
True.
What were his discoveries.
True.
Or even though we live in the technology that his discoveries gave rise to, and the scientists who subsequently came up with quantum mechanics. But so I looked at this and I realized, well, why wait? Why should we wait for the science, for the more up-to-date discoveries to reach our mind and awareness? We can do it of our own volition, consciously. And this is why I created Quantum Think. Now, the other thing is that along the way, I created it so that we could do it consciously. Okay, what are the quantum principles? How do they match the spiritual wisdom? How do we make it practical? I say my new mantra now is, when they say, what is quantum think? Wisdom made practical. Yeah. And this is one of the kind of oddities that I find about some of these very, very, scientists who are, not, I appreciate the rigor that they want to have in the science, in the scientific expectation and the proofs and everything. At the same time, where I don't know whether they take seriously subjective experience, what we call subjective. But I know what I was thinking of is that I was listening to someone the other day, in fact, on another show. It was a scientist from Harvard, and she was talking about, well, you know, what the bleep do we know movie and The Secret, you know, people, they shouldn't be using the quantum principles that way.
Right.
You know, applied to humanity, and it hasn't been proven. It only works at the quantum level, subatomic. Actually, that isn't even true experimentally. They're now discovering that it does seem it works on a macro scale. But aside from that, just looking at here we are, right? I mean, we're people. We're living, right? We're alive on this earth. We want to have a great life. We want the world to work for everyone. And so doesn't it make sense if I was a philosophy major. If you can't have philosophy apply to life in a practical way, if you can't have science apply to everyday living in a practical way that enhances life, that brings more joy and fulfillment in everyday life, then what's the use of it?
Yeah, and I think that people often forget that probably the most famous philosopher ever, who I'm going to say was Socrates or Plato, depending on what side of that fence you're on, you know, he had that one phrase, one principle, that the unexamined life is not worth living. And I think that's something that we all need to keep in mind, because we only have one life to lead. And Socrates said something very important there, and I think that books like yours and books like mine, hopefully, where we're trying to get people to think differently, are extremely important. And I'm gonna echo something you said that I've been, which is, should the change come from the top or from the bottom? Should we change? Do we need to change consciousness? Do we need to rise to a higher level by changing the thought leaders, or by changing the way the thought leaders think? Or is there an uprising? And on the uprising front, I like to call it Occupy Stanford or Occupy MIT. And we should be or Occupy the Large Hadron Collider. There is no doubt there is a simmering uprising, but I do think that there are people looking for leadership, and that's they're looking for role models. They're looking for someone they trust that will lead them into this new way of thinking. If nothing else, it will speed things up.
And you know what? When you say looking for leadership, this is a really important comment that you're making, because I have to preface this by saying, in the very beginning of my book, I'm saying, what if there's nothing wrong with us? Because I think one of the things that stops people from being able to awaken beyond your own habits. You think, well, wait a minute, there's nothing, if there's another view and it's not mine, then there must be something my view, right? And we don't like to be made wrong in any way or criticized, of course. So, but what I'm saying is, what if there's nothing really wrong with us? You know, despite mounting evidence to the contrary, you know, where people, these, you know, human ills against each other and all the horrible things that we see in the world daily in the news, even the way the news is reported, even the way the politicians are, all this divisiveness and attack, 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 that what if we are simply conditioned by this mechanical worldview where in the physical we look different, so therefore, you know, anything like, wait a minute, in that level of evolution, I think we are definitely, most definitely, as you're pointing to, Philip, at a time of an evolutionary leap, but what if all that is just a vestige of the old worldview, mechanical kind of conditioning, that we, in order to think in a new way, it's not just to have a new idea or a new way to do something, but to make a leap in systems. You see, when I say new thinking, I'm talking about a systemic shift where, what I was starting to say before, the old fits into the new, but the new doesn't fit into the old because the new is the more expansive way, right? This infinite possibility universe of energy and flux informed by intelligence, connecting through invisible fields of resonance, right?
Right.
So you, when you see, then what you can do is you cannot see a new worldview from the perspective of an old worldview. So what do? We leap in consciousness and you start to look from the expanded principles, not at them from your more limited perspective. So this is the kind of can make that's an expansion in the whole way that we relate to everything. Because when you say people are looking, you know, that there's this uprising, it's that people recognize we've reached the limits of the thinking that gave rise, you know, the famous, I call it, modern day mantra from Einstein, the problems we have cannot be solved with the same level of thinking that created them. So people are in the experience of that and looking for leaders. So when you think, well, how can we have leadership, real leadership, when the leader cannot think beyond their either or point of view, conservative or progressive, for example, right?
Right.
There can't be the kind of global leadership that people are looking for when you're stuck with that kind of a limited worldview.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something, there's a whole nother line of thinking out there that you're probably aware of, sort of heralded by Hegel and Chardin and Aurobindo and Ken Wilber, where they believe that there is a natural expansion of consciousness. In other words, it's happening naturally. This rising of consciousness is part of the evolutionary pull or push of the cosmos. And I'm perfectly fine with that because you really can't speak of consciousness without speaking of people, since people are the only things that we really know are conscious.
Right.
And so it, to me, what's beautiful about this is that, and this is part of my triangulation or the multiple paths of convergence. And by saying that I don't mean anything real fancy. I mean that there's more than one line of evidence pointing to this. That's really what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at, like, Ken Wilber will say that the consciousness goes through stages. And it goes through the family, the country, and then the world, and then the universe, and then the overmind. So the mind itself gradually rises in consciousness until, as Hegel would say, it understands that it is all reality. And so what is happening, I think, is that we have multiple lines of evidence pointing in the same direction, and we need to find a way to articulate it so that the common person can identify with it and accelerate. I mean, as you say, I think it's fair to say that you're using the term quantum leap sort of metaphorically in terms of the jump in thinking.
Actually, I'm using it literally.
You are using it literally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you are saying that the mind itself makes this leap from one. Go ahead. Why don't you put it in your own words?
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that it, and it's fine. It doesn't matter to me whether it's literal or metaphorical. But what
you're saying
is that
if you think of it literal, because I'll tell you why. And I Ken Wilber, may, you know, obviously brilliant, and you know, can't say enough about him. But in a certain way, that he's distinguishing something which we would all, you know, there is this pull toward an evolutionary cycle, and Hegel said, you know, thesis, antithesis, and then you come to synthesis, and it's this constant upward spiral. So, but if you look at it that way, that, you know, well, it's happening naturally on its own. Well, that may be the case, but I think that we've got to go on that point. And this is what I'm saying. It's like if you can look at how it's gone, and in a certain way, that's still using a certain way of analytical thinking about it, right?
Right.
So, because you're analyzing, well, it's gone this way, and there's, oh, you could say we know from history that there have always been a small number of enlightened, who we would call enlightened beings, right?
Right.
Those people who have literally, they lived a life awakened beyond the automatic conditioning of whatever cultural or era that they lived in, right?
Right.
And we could name those people, and we do, and we pray to them, and, you know, some of them. So, and what I'm saying, and I hope I made my book, by the way, as conversational so that anyone can and be entertained at the same time reading it, that you, this is where it comes in, up that story about Lincoln Barnett, because let's do this consciously. You know, waiting for, you know, the natural cycle of consciousness to unfold itself, well, forget that. That's how I feel about it.
Well, what's interesting,
we can do it consciously, and so you.
Well, I see. You see.
Leap,
right, right. The only difference that I would make is that it's the same thing. There's no difference between, in my mind, there's no difference between saying it's natural and it's conscious, because as consciousness increases, it realizes it has control over it.
See, yeah, that's true.
And therefore,
that is true. That's the paradox of it.
And therefore can accelerate it. And I'm all with you. I'm all in on accelerating. And
yeah,
it's time. But I think that what is the most important thing is that it has to be done in a critical mass kind of way. There has to be a movement. There has to be this uprising that I'm talking about. There has to be a real change, and so that affects the mindset of humankind. See,
I think that's how it's. I believe that's how it's happening, because right. You see, what you're saying is a really a quantum effect way of looking at it. It's that. If we looked at it the other way, right, the linear way, well, it'll save time and, you know, let's get more people quantum thinking or whatever. Yes, and, right, the both and,
right.
Is that what you're saying, and if you really, when you are clear and you start literally living the wisdom of the principles rather than knowing it or conceptualizing about it, that you realize that we exist in resonant field, and that even more than that, you know, this notion of non-local mind that scientists use, and I use this too, that it's an exchange that's not even an energetic exchange, an instantaneous exchange of intelligence, of connectiveness. And I think, you know, we can learn a lot using the internet as a metaphor, which I feel is we extend ourselves as an extension of mind, and then look at it in the external world and learn about ourselves from it. So that the internet is easily located anywhere, as we would consider an ordinary object in space and time, and the mind is like that, right?
Yeah, I like that analogy that you draw, and I don't know whether if that was your own. I think that's a really good analogy, the internet.
I really
like it because it's similar. It's not exactly the same as the way I look at things, which is that if the individual computers are individual people pointing up to the quote unquote universal mind or the internet, it's a really good analogy.
What I like is that if you think of it as connectivity, right? So let's say what you're talking about, this quantum effect of this shift in consciousness, that's why I think, quantum leap, we're doing it all the time. You know, when your thoughts are just flitting,
right.
You're choosing your thoughts most of the time, right? Where are they coming from? Well, right. It's in the, we're our end at the edge of our body, right? At the
right.
end of, so we're extending out and things are coming in and out. And this is where, in a very ordinary way, when I say when you master your mind, you master your life, because we tend to have a new relationship to your thoughts. And that you're not choosing most of them, and therefore you don't have to believe your own thoughts and then make that your reality. You can just say, oh, there's a, I call it least action pathway.
Yeah.
The way the thought went, because it's been that route before, mechanical, non-conscious, you just have a negative thought or a doubtful thought. You go, oh, that's just a least action pathway. What's my intent here, consciously? So getting, that was a little aside, because I like to always bring it down to earth, but when we talk about, how is this shift in consciousness going to actually happen, and I think that's what you're talking about, Philip, is that when you realize that we do exist in these fields, that it's a non-local mind field, so that we can hold it as it's already occurring, and then we start to, we educate ourselves to these principles. We make this leap to a more expanded way of relating and thinking. And it becomes our way of life. And like anything else, that becomes the new vortex. But I think a very important aspect of this, because when I hear, other people who are leaders of, who I would are leading thinkers and leaders of consciousness, or you would say movement, that it's spoken about as if we have to get somewhere. Yet, when you're, let's say, from a quantum thinking view, when you create an intent, because the mind functions beyond the limits of chronological time and ordinary physical space, you state it as if it's already that way. So if you have something that's going to happen in the future, then what you're doing is you're reinforcing that it's not happening now. Does that make sense to you?
I think that that's correct. My own view is that the way we're really going to make this happen is that when we switch places with the science professors. In other words, we'll have you teaching a class, the science, it'll be science and spirituality or just science or quantum think, and the mechanical worldview will be taught as history. Because I think that's when we'll really know, because it's sort of like, I still feel like a lot of this is in the freak show where the Nobel Prize winners are in the big tent, and we really need to switch places, but I do think it will happen naturally. But having made that point, I also agree with you that it is our purpose, if we accept it, to accelerate that movement. And I think the quantum thinking concept is a real good way to look at this. Now, because we're running late, I'm going to ask you one more question, and then we're going to make sure everybody knows your website and how to get a hold of you.
Great.
And the last question is going to be, if there's one point that you'd like to have people get from your book, what would be that one message from your book?
I would say that this is easier than you think to live life from this more expanded, more masterful way of living by being able to relate to the way that the role of your mind in everything that you want in life, all of the results, whether it's inner peace, spiritual kind of result, whether it's an outer world result, a global result, whether it's something with your family, something with your own finances, that it's a lot easier than you think. And then you think, there's that word again.
Yeah.
And that's really it. And it's that, and not only that, it's something enjoyable to, and here's the main thing. There's nothing that I'm saying in the book or in life that you don't already have at some, it's universal. This is why people like it, because it connects you to what is already you. And all I'm doing is distinguishing it in awareness so that your connection to it is you can use it.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to wrap things up. And it's important for us to understand that this quantum thinking, this new open-ended way of viewing things, is a positive development. It leads to unlimited possibilities. It's something that if you think about, it's hard to turn it down. I'd like to thank you, Diane, for a very entertaining and informative discussion. I think your website is Diane Collins with two N's in the Diane and two L's in the Collins. Is that right?
That's exactly
and
right.
Then you also have another,
and
then you also have another website, Quantum Think, is it?
Yeah.
Quantum
that
Think.
Website will be taken down soon, so right. It's better to go to Diane Collins, DianeCollins.com, okay. And you can you can go to quantumthink.com, there's a few things on there, a Quantum Think quiz with your quotient, and right. Also on DianeCollins.com, my husband and I conduct a free teleseminar twice a month, and you'll read about it there, for readers of my book, so that we have an interactive session going on, and how it's again wisdom applied in real everyday life.
Yeah, and again, I'd like to thank you, and I think we all need to remember that at the end of the day, the true thoughts are still around, and I think that with this new perception, this new way of thinking, it's going to be hard to lose the battle. We just have to make sure that we keep our minds open, that we consider quantum thinking, and check out Diane's website. This is Philip Mirton. My own website is www.heavenattheendofscience.com. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much, Philip. Beautiful, wonderful show, and great work.